Hi, I'm Kathy Forstey, music director at KC Cafe Radio. We are very happy to have veteran folk musician and songwriter Alan Frank as a KC Cafe Radio artist. Songs from his album, The Road So Far, have been very successful in the Roots Music Report chart over the last year. Alan has been making music since his teens, and many of his songs have been award-winning songs by artists from all over the world. Thanks so much, Alan, for taking the time to chat with me here on KC Cafe Radio.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
I just mentioned in the intro that you've been writing music since your teens. I'm curious to know, what type of songs were you writing as a teenager?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, I grew up with Simon and Garfunkel and, you know, everything from, not that I was writing it, but everything from Jimi Hendrix to Simon and Garfunkel to the Byrds to James Taylor. There was kind of a folky artist kind of thing going on there. I love Peter, Paul, and Mary, and I would play a lot of those songs when I was learning to play guitar and stuff. And then I really got into Elton John after a while. So the kind of stuff I wasn't really doing a whole lot of writing. You know, I'd write some poetry here or put some little melody together, but I never really considered it as like, oh, I'm going to be writing songs, you know. That didn't happen until a little bit later.
And did you come from a musical family, or were you like just the only kid in your family that was making music? How did you get into music?
You know, it's funny. I didn't have a musical family, so to speak. But my grandfather had a piano in the home, and they had I guess taken my mom and them and my uncles had taken you know, some piano lessons, and there were some people, I guess, in the family that had played a little bit, but it wasn't anything where I had that great influence. If you have parents, you know, who are musicians, it's really a great advantage. But what was interesting was when I was 3 years old, I would love to get up and sit on the piano bench and play, you know, just mess around on the piano and make stories up. Little elves running around or whatever, or the big giant comes in and using the heavy keys, and you know, this is all stuff and you don't know, you know, what you're doing, but I do remember that, and it was one of those things where I never really got to the piano lessons, but my parents did note, they did see me fooling around with guitars and stuff, and finally when I was 16 I finally got my first musical instrument, and that was a guitar.
Uh-huh. What kind of guitar was it?
Well, it wasn't a very good guitar.
Okay.
it was called a Harmony Sovereign.
Uh-huh.
And the frets were pretty hard to push down. And so my advice to anybody, any parent talking about giving their kid a guitar, I always say, make sure you invest in a good guitar for them, because it makes a big deal of difference. So it was a few years later that I started messing around with some other guitars, and I had, I don't know, kind of used beat-up guitars, no real great brand names, but some were pretty good, and I would pick them up and start using them and play those.
Mm-hmm. And where did you grow up at?
I'm from Peoria, Illinois.
Okay.
So the Midwest. I've got the Midwest roots going.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a lot of... you know, there was music in town, and I got involved in a lot of musical theater and things like that as I got older.
We talked about, you know, you started playing guitar in your teens. What time did you actually start writing real music?
Well, it's interesting. It really wasn't until college. I had gone to school a couple years and majored in psychology, and that isn't really what I wanted to do. And my brother said, why don't you take some time off? And I took some time off and worked and got involved in a lot of theater. And then I realized, hey, that's what I want to do. I want to major in theater because I like that. That's a lot of fun, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so went back to school and got my degree. Well, when I graduated, I was still there getting a teaching certificate for another semester. And a guy asked me to come help him on his play. He was directing. And they knew, you know, I played guitar and sang, and I would sing, you know, cover songs for little events and stuff at the college. But the guy said, hey, you know, this is like a Carl Sandburg play, and we want to take his poetry and put some to music and do some things like that. And And so there was another guy who was working at the music store in town, and he and I worked together and put music to this play and arranged things. And it was kind of my discovery of like, oh, this actually could be something neat. And I started toying around with doing some different lyrics, and I thought to myself, wow, this songwriting, how hard can that be? You know? And I said, maybe I should do this. That was really kind of the start of it. So I was in my 20s, early 20s before I really said, hey, I want to try this. The first song I wrote, interestingly enough, was a story of a place I worked. After I had graduated, I stayed with my sister in a small town called Canton in central Illinois. And there was a program where they were trying to restore strip mine land that had been, you know, they used to come in and just rip up the land and then leave everything. But there were lakes that were formed in those areas. But they wanted to kind of restore the prairie. And so they created this thing called the Prairie Plan. And what they did, it was tied in with the Metropolitan Sanitary District of Chicago, believe it or not, because they had excess, what they called sludge, which I think we all know what that is. Mm-hmm. And they would barge that down the river. And at Liverpool, Illinois, they had a docking station. And they would pump all that sludge all the way out over to where we were, where this strip mine land was. And we would take that, and it would actually put harrows on the back of tractors and take that and plow that into the ground, plow that sludge into the ground, trying to rejuvenate this land that had been devastated.
Yeah.
And I thought it was really, really, really interesting. And that was my first song I wrote, was called The Prairie Plan, because I thought it was so ironic that they're trying to turn this land into a beautiful place just using the discarded material from Chicago.
Cool. That's interesting. It's like one, maybe your first environmental type song. Was it in that kind of vein, or?
Yeah, I guess it was. I mean, and kind of ironic, tongue in cheek kind of thing too.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, and here we are working all day from dawn till dusk, plowing waste in the ground from man, trying to make the land as it was in a thing called the Prairie Plan. And it was, yeah, that's kind of the how the lyrics are on it. So,
uh-huh.
Yeah. But yeah, that was kind of my first real song.
Mm-hmm.
And the company, actually, I gave a copy of it to them. They kept it and put it up somewhere in their office somewhere or something.
Oh, cool. So did you ever write for theater at all? Did you ever write for any musicals or?
No, not really. It was one of those things where I personally do want to do that. But I have worked with different people who've been involved in musical theater, and we've attempted to do some stuff. But I really realized at some point that, you know, I really want to study the craft of writing and understand the craft of writing and really get to know it. Not, you know, what makes a song really great? And, you know, nobody has the answers for what, you know, what's going to be a great song or not. But there's a whole lot of craft involved. And I took an interest in that. And I thought to myself, you know, before I even try to write a musical, I ought to know how to write a good song. And so that became kind of the thing where I decided I would go ahead and study the craft of writing.
How often do you write?
Well, ultimately, I would like to write every day. And I journal every day as best I can, not always. And then sometimes there'll be some ideas that come out of that. Or I just may, you know, wake up at 3 or 4 in the morning with a melodic idea in my head and come in and put that down. Right now, I'm not writing as much, but there's a few things going on. So what I like to do is get a little time in, at least. There's a little saying, I think, by Tom Paxton that I always like to write in my journal, and it's something like, let me see how it goes. Nothing but good can come from writing every day. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of my mantra. Mm-hmm. And the goal is to try to, if you're even busy with everything, at least try to carve out 10-15 minutes to put some time in.
Right.
And generally it can end up being greater than that, you know, longer period of time.
Yeah, and it's one, like, even if you write something, you might go back and do something on it later, you know. I mean, that's what I find myself doing. I've written something, and then if I'm stuck or something in a song, I'll go back and look at other things, like, oh, this works here, you know. So you can always use it.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So music or lyrics come first, or it kind of goes either way with you?
Yeah,
with
either way. I mean, Yeah, a lot of times there'll be some kind of melodic line and there'll be some kind of catchphrase in there, and you just kind of just say that and kind of play some music over it, or there may actually be something where I'm actually got an idea that I want to write it out and write the idea down, and I'm not really sure where the music is going to be in it.
Mm-hmm.
But it comes from both sides, usually.
And you've done quite a bit of co-writing too. How do you find co-writing partners?
The way it happened is I did have a good friend who was a songwriter that I had met in college. And when I, quote-unquote, retired from a job that I took in California to make some money, I got together with him, and we actually were talking about writing a musical. So we co-wrote a little bit. But getting back to that point about the craft and everything, living in Los Angeles is great because there were a couple of places where I could go. My wife's roommate, her uncle was Vernon Duke, who wrote April in Paris and a lot of stuff like that. She told me about the Songwriters Guild, and they had workshops where you could go. And there I met lots of songwriters to co-write with. Then I went to UCLA. They had a songwriting extension program where you could get songwriting certification. I met songwriters there that I could write with. One of the guys that taught a class at the Songwriters Guild, his name is Phil Swan, he was a good teacher and a good writer. He had done a lot of work in Nashville. He suggested, you know, if we're serious, go to Nashville. So I went down there and got involved in the Nashville Songwriters Association and their song camps, and met writers down there. My goal, when I was starting to take this, I was going to write with everyone in the class, which is an impossibility. But you know, I was really into it, and I really just wanted to absorb everything and just pick up what everybody else was getting out of things. And so I just was trying to write as much as possible and just keep, you know, keep plugging at it. And the cool thing was, is these were all structured environments where we could bring our songs in and get the feedback of other writers and the teachers in the classes. Mm-hmm. And it was really, really good, I think, in helping me to write a lot better songs. So it really, I think it's real important. And I find that, you know, it gives me sometimes an advantage when we're stuck somewhere trying to write, that I can kind of go back into my files and kind of say, oh yeah, this is the situation. Yeah, well, we can do this, or we can do this, or try this or that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a great thing, I think, the co-writing thing. But there's also a great deal to be said for doing your own writing. And that has something to do with finding your own voice. And that is what a lot of the artists are doing when they're putting out their albums. A lot of the people that you play on your radio station, they've been writing their own songs for years, not doing a lot of co-writing, and they develop their own voice. And I think that's real important to do as well.
Yeah.
So that you can balance what you can bring to the table versus what other people can bring to the table. So it's a fascinating process, and I love songwriters. I just love other songwriters. It's just, I've never met a group that I feel more comfortable with.
Yeah, I found that with co-writing, the thing that helps me a lot with a co-writer is they make a good editor. Or sometimes in songs where I say things and I'm like, that can be said shorter and in a better way, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's really one of the positives of co-writing, is that they can kind of help boil it down to what you're trying to say instead of you getting so lengthy about what you're writing about. So.
Yeah, exactly. I just recently had a co-write with two other people, and it was a struggle. the young girl had brought in an idea, which we liked, but how we were getting to that and where our chorus was and what we were trying to say, what we wanted to say, and how was the music structure on it. Mm-hmm. It just was a lot of work. It doesn't always just fall off your tongue. There's sometimes a lot of effort that has to go into it, even in co-writing situations.
Right.
But the whole idea of having someone else as an editor really kind of sometimes streamlines the process. You don't sit and fool around with stuff that later you're going to toss out. They're there to balance it out for you.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned writing in L.A. and in Nashville. What do you find is the biggest difference between writing with people in those two different places in the country?
Well, I do think, you know, even though I said I studied craft in Los Angeles, I think a lot of the writers that I encounter here, like at open mics and stuff, have not gone through the craft process as much, whereas in Nashville, I think a lot more of those writers have, not everybody, but a lot of them have been kind of schooled in the craft of writing, or they'll have, you know, they'll just have things that they know because they have been working with pros down there, and the craft is kind of an understood thing. So I would say that that's one of the bigger differences. Here, people, I think, in L.A. are more free-flowing. They're not too worried about how crafted it is, or sometimes more. And in Nashville, sometimes there's more of that craft that's put to the paper. It's really, you know, all about, are you communicating? And are you communicating on some kind of emotional level with somebody else? Mm-hmm. Whether it's making them feel good, feel happy, or whatever. And that's the magic bullet there. And so no amount of craft can teach you that. And at the same time, free-flowing can be great. And sometimes you can just feel your way through a song and it's just perfect. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times, sometimes you can feel your way through a song and nobody knows what you're talking about.
Yeah, that happens a lot. So I also read in your bio that you've co-written with Gary Burr and Chris Tompkins. Can you tell me how you were able to write with those guys?
That was a result of winning a song contest. I had written a song. One of the guys in one of these classes, it was one of the people that I said, well, I want to write with everybody in the class. And I said, okay, Joe, it's your turn. And he was more of a composer. He knew the piano pretty well. And so he had some pretty nice chops that he could do. And I had a strong idea that I wanted to bring. I felt this idea was really strong. And so I said, well, okay, so here's my idea. And then he said, well, let's get together and do it. And we wrote it. And it ended up winning this Unisong International Song Contest. And as a result of that, my co-writer and I got to go down and write with a top songwriter in Nashville, and that happened to be Gary Burr. So we wrote one song with him, and then he thought that went pretty well, and so we came back and we wrote another song with him. And when I was coming back for the second time, I wrote a lot of a guy by the name of Jason Bloom also does some song crafting things, and he's written a book. I'd met with him and was talking to him about winning this contest and going down to Nashville. He suggested that I should contact a lot of publishers down there and tell them I'm writing with Gary Burr, one of the hottest writers in Nashville.
Right.
And I said, okay. And I wrote about 20, 25 publishers, and most of them blew me off. But a couple of them did say, well, why don't you come and write with my guys? And one of the guys that invited me to come write was named Dan Hodges. And Dan just was starting a company with Kent Blazy, who had written a hit for Garth Brooks. And they were starting a company, and they had just signed this young 23-year-old kid from Muscle Shoals. And I believe, and I think I was his first, you know, outside co-write when he got to Nashville. And so we just got together, sat in a room, and we wrote a song in a hurry. But I mean, it was a little bit of work, but we wrote the song that's on the album, on my album called A Night in Buffalo. And he was a good writer, you know, you could tell. And so what happened was I came back and we worked on a couple other things whenever I would travel to Nashville. But slowly but surely, he began writing with other artists, and his palette got filled up real quick his plate got filled up real quick, rather, and with a lot of writers and me coming in and out of town, he just had to cut out some people. So I didn't get to continue to write with him, but I'm grateful for the chance that I did have to write with him. We at least have one good song out of it, I think.
That kind of leads me to my next question, because I was wanting to talk a little bit about the CD, The Road So Far. And one of my favorite songs is A Night in Buffalo. So when the two of you sat down to write that, what was the inspiration for that song?
Wow. Geez, let me think. Okay, so he just had this little chord progression thing, this kind of D over G thing, the opening lick. And he was playing that. He liked that. And he just started playing, you know, just kind of playing this over and over again. And then I just started singing lyrics off the top of my head. And we just, you know, we kind of worked through it. And he kept playing, and I kept coming up with some lyrics. And I was surprised at sometimes what would pop out. So it was kind of a natural process, and then I got kind of stuck lyric-wise at the chorus, and then he came up with some good lines in the chorus. So it was a true joint co-write. It wasn't like, you know, one of us did all the work. I mean, you know, he was able to play, and when I got stuck, he was able to move it on, and if he got stuck, I was able to move it on. So that was what was kind of cool about it. And the process went actually fairly quickly in writing a song. I mean, we did it in probably under 2 hours, which is really surprising because that doesn't happen to me very often.
So at what point do you know when a song is done?
who was it? Irving Berlin or somebody had a comment about that. It was like, a song is never done. It's just like I stop working on it or something like that. How he said it, but a friend of mine had actually seen him down in Hollywood years ago, and had asked him. It's fun. Oh, I bring her up, but he was asking him about that, and that's something that he said. But also, one thing that just strikes me right now is that he also he said, Irving, Mr. Berlin, how is it that you've written so many greats? How many you've written? You know, he's writing all these different songs, and they're just so good. How is it that you wrote all these good songs? He said, because I wrote a heck of a lot of bad ones.
Yeah.
But getting back to, now I went off point, and I can't remember your question.
Well,
again.
It was just, you know, how do you know when a song is finished?
Yeah, it's, you know, to me, it's like, it's almost, like a spiritual thing. Songs are so messy. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're trying to work on them, you never know where's supposed to go, what this and that, and what's supposed to fit here. And you know, a lot of times I am always open to rewriting it, and it's rare, but most of my songs, I think, are pretty, you know, it's like it gets to a point where you're tweaking now just little words here and there, and you kind of get the gist of it. And so I never really can say a song is completely finished, but I you know, you get to a point where you just say, okay, you know, I really, really worked this. And there has been a time when I've written a song and it's just like I've gone through it and it's like, okay, all the words, everything is lining up just perfectly, and you know, that's it. But that's rare too. I don't have a lot of those songs. Mostly it gets to a point where it's working real well, and you play it out or whatever, you play it for people and you get their feedback, and you go back and look at some of their comments and see if they make sense, and and if it makes sense, you maybe tweak it here or there. But I think songwriting is dynamic. I think it's kind of an ever-changing thing. But at some point, you've got to put a stake in the sand or whatever, stake in the ground, and say, you know, okay, this is done. I got to move on to something else.
Mm-hmm.
And so.
But I think as long as you perform the song, it's always living and breathing its own life, too, you know, because, you know, you can change a lyric there, here and there, or an emphasis in the song here and there, you know. So
yeah, absolutely. So many artists, like I said, the artists that you're playing and stuff, the song evolves. They take the song out, they play it, and then that song evolves as they play it every day or whenever they play out. And they keep playing it and playing it, and it changes, and it changes, and it changes. And finally, it gets to a point where, hey, I feel comfortable with that song now. Now it's settled in. It feels right. The words are flowing pretty nicely. Everything is good. Then I think you kind of know. I say, okay, now I think that's the song. I think that's it, you know.
Mm-hmm. We're kind of, you know, going into like sort of a spiritual category here. So one of the songs that's also on the CD I like a lot is Lift Me Up. In a lot of ways, I kind of feel like that's a spiritual kind of song. Was that what you were going for in writing that song?
It's interesting that you mentioned that song, because I pretty much did not write the lyrics to that song. I have a very good friend in Eastern Tennessee. I don't want to get too much into it, but he has an very interesting story himself, and he has a debilitating disease which prevents him from doing a lot of things. But he's always been a poet, and he and I met on an airplane flying out of Nashville one time, and I don't even think he can travel much anymore. He's not very old. He's in his 40s. He and I clicked on the airplane, and we started sending each other lyrics and music, and he basically wrote poetry, and he had a ton of poems that he sent me, and his name is Charlie Cook, and he sent me this lyric, and I was going through songs to put music to, and I thought, this would be kind of cool as a gospel song. And then I kind of tweaked it a little bit, and I talked to him about some of the lyrics didn't quite make as much sense here or there. And also my producer, Ed Tree, he had some comments on it. And then the actual demo production of it we did, I went actually back to the Appalachians around Asheville, North Carolina. I wanted some authentic musicians on that album who kind of have grown up playing the guitar since they could walk, you know, and just basically, it's just like they play the instruments. It's been in their family for generations. Their great-great-grandfather's playing, and they passed it down, and there's just such a natural feel to it. So the guy that I had do a lot of the music on that was Jeff Tolbert. And he's in a gospel group called the Primitive Quartet back east. And he played the fiddle in that and the several other instruments there, and kind of brought that song to life. I brought in the music and the lyrics. But, you know, when we were putting that together, that just really just took on a life of its own. Mm. I was real happy.
Yeah, it's a great tune. And then another song that I want to ask you about that I like a lot is Deep in the Everglades. Where did that song come from?
That came from a personal experience. When I graduated college, I took about 6 months to just get in my car and drive and just head out. And I just wanted to kind of just go and camp out and just, you know, just basically discover life, you know, a little bit. Been going to school and everything, so headed out, went down south. I knew some people down there, and my ex-girlfriend's brother was down in New Orleans, and this girl I'd went to school with is in Texas, and it's really, really fascinating. I drove down and stayed time in Texas, where I got to see people like, in Austin, saw people like Lightning Hopkins and Big Willie Dixon's. We went to some blues clubs, and then the next night we went to another club, and there was Jerry Jeff Walker playing around, you know, just playing to the tables, and that was really cool. And then I went to New Orleans, and I did a little busking right in front of Jackson Square, and then continued on, and I met this couple who were walking around the perimeter of the United States, and they actually did it. They actually finished it, but this was back around 76, something like that. And they were actually, had started on the East Coast, Upper East Coast, and the guy anyway, they were walking around the perimeter of the United States. And I spent some time with them, and they told me about a guy down in the Everglades I could stay with if I went down there. So I did. I ended up going down there and looking up this guy, and it was the funniest thing. It was like really ramshackle, down there, really deep down in the Everglades, and just a dirt road, you know, and some trailers and, you know, junk cars sitting around. And I said, hey, I understand this guy, Bill lives here. I'll just say Bill. I won't say his name. But it was fascinating because so many things happened when they said, well, he's not here. Go down the road. And I went down. He said, he's in the next town, and there's a wedding they're celebrating. So I went down to the next town. Well, the next town was nothing more than a gas station and a bar. And so I went in there, and I said, hey, is Bill Smith here? You know, and they said, oh, yeah, he's over there. And I went over and talked to him and stuff. And I said, hey, you know, these other people told me and blah, blah, blah. And he says, oh, yeah, you can stay with me and so on and so forth. And they were having a party. They were celebrating down in the Everglades, and that's kind of where that song came from. Mm-hmm. But an offshoot of that was funny because he says, see that old guy over there with the beard? And I said, yeah, yeah. He said, you know who that is? And I said, no. He said, that's Irwin Rouse. And I don't know if you know who Irwin Rouse is, but he wrote the classic song Orange Blossom Special.
Oh, wow.
So before the night was over, they found out I played guitar, and I was up on the stage playing guitar, and I was backing up Irwin Rouse playing the Orange Blossom Special.
Wow.
And I was just like, this is so far out, you know? And it was just a serendipitous moment.
Yeah.
And then later I went fishing with Irwin. So it was really kind of really quite a trip. So that whole experience brought that song to light. A good friend of mine, Gary Corman, I brought it to him. I said, I want to write this song. And so he and I worked on it. And then finally, my producer, Ed Tree, added some stuff. And we put that song together. So I was real, real happy how that turned out.
Yeah. So you never know where the roads in life are going to lead you, right? To who
no,
and to
don't.
Where.
No.
That's crazy. So did you record The Road So Far in Nashville?
Well, you wouldn't believe it. I recorded it all around. I did some in Nashville. I took parts of it from demos I had done in Nashville. I did some of it in Asheville, North Carolina, or on the outskirts of Asheville, a smaller town. I did some in L.A., and it kind of brought all the pieces back. You know, when we were putting this together, we were trying to figure out what songs are we going to put on this album. And we had, you know, a few more than this. My bottom line is that Ed Tree did a great job. We took a lot of time. We took pieces of these songs, and we put them together, and in some cases we had to add a verse or something, and we, using Pro Tools, he was able to get all that put together and then add our own instrumentation and bring in other musicians. So it was really a cornucopia of various recordings that was all pulled together and then brought into kind of a cohesive whole with the talent of Ed Tree.
So how long would you say it took to put the whole album together then?
It took probably, if I really say from the time we said, okay, we're going to make the album, it probably could have taken a year to do, maybe something like that, because we were just playing around with a lot of stuff. And then we sent tracks back to North Carolina so that Jeff could add some stuff to them, and then we'd bring him back in. And I was working on my voice. I'd been taking some voice lessons and stuff because I wanted to really work on that. So it took a long time. Actually, you know, I was working on the album, the idea of doing the album, for longer, much longer than that, probably about 3 or 4 years. But the time from when we actually started it until, let's say, we wrapped it up, I'd say at least was a year.
And so are you going to be working on another album or going back to Nashville and writing again? Or?
Yes, to both. I just recently signed a contract down in Nashville to go to work with Dan Hodges, the guy that set me up with Chris Tompkins originally. And I'm going to be going down there and writing more for that market. But at the same time, I'll be meeting writers down there and hopefully building relationships and hopefully writing more stuff for my album. I had some other ideas for some other albums that I wanted to release, but this one person suggested that you need to write an album about who is Alan Frank, so people can get to know who you are a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And so I am working on songs that are related to that. And so I'll be working on that through this year, and hopefully by next year that I'll be able to put it together. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to take a year, though. I'm just telling you that.
It's going to be a shorter, more concise.
Well, the point is, learning, understanding the cost of studios and everything else, I understand the process a whole lot better now, and it's just going to make it easier for me to go in and kind of, okay, this is what we want to do, bang, bang, and we'll be able to execute things a lot better, and I'll have a better idea of all of that stuff.
So. Yeah. Are you going to be using, studios in Nashville or L.A., or do you know where you're going yet for recording?
Well, I sure like working with Ed. I'd like to work with him again, but I think there'll be some really good opportunities in Nashville to cut some tracks, too, so I'm open, I haven't nailed down where it's going to be yet, and it's still in process, and it's hard to tell.
So on the road so far, would you consider that it was more of an Americana style or more of a country style, and do you see that the next album going in that same direction, or are you going to take it in another direction?
The road so far I considered Americana, for lack of a better genre. I know that I had talked with a lady, Carrie Estrin, who has done some consulting with folk musicians in Nashville, and she had indicated that the album really didn't fit into any real, in other words, it had elements of country, it had elements of folk, it had elements of gospel and just different genres, so it didn't really fit into any real, I couldn't call it a folk album, and I couldn't call it a country album, and so she said it was really hard to categorize the album. She said it's a good album, but it's hard to categorize it, and so I had been going to the Americana conference for a few years, and I heard so many different kinds of music there, blues and zydeco and country and bluegrass and all kinds of stuff. And basically that's the label that fit. All of that stuff combined was kind of an Americana sound. And there's folk purists where you can't play any electric instruments and stuff. So it's like, where does that album fit? And, when I was making it, I never really gave any consideration to that. But what I kind of want to do is, I think, develop different styles for different albums. And I'm not exactly sure how the next album is going to lay out there. It may have some electric instruments, it may not. But there are some in the future that I'd like to do, which are going to be maybe based strictly acoustic and maybe with Celtic, based in Celtic style, Celtic and bluegrass, and things like that. So my goal is to create each album as a unique kind of package, a little bit different in style, and basing that on what the content of the album is about and everything, and how the album, after I write a number of songs related to that album, how does that feel? And so I'm going to just kind of keep it open because I don't know where it'll all lead. I'd like to get into some synthesizer and electric guitar stuff at some point on an album, and just take it in different directions, make each album kind of its own statement. This next one, I think, is going to be kind of folky, but maybe have a little bit of elements of more Americana, country-ish sound to it.
Well, we've certainly enjoyed playing the Songs from Road so far. It's a really great album, and you mentioned there's various styles represented in the album, and so it's one song is not similar to another one, other than good songwriting and good songs. I just want to let everybody know that they can find your music on iTunes and at CD Baby, and also they can go to your website, which is alanfrankmusic.com. And they can find out more about you and about the songs. And I think they can also download the songs on your site as well. Is that true?
Well, you can stream the songs.
Stream them, okay.
Site. Yeah, I think they can be downloaded from iTunes and places like that.
Yeah, I know they can download them at iTunes. And you can purchase a physical CD at CD Baby. And you can also get a CD at your website, too, of an autographed one, right, too?
Yeah, still have a few left. And Alan is spelled A-L-L-A-N. A lot of people will spell the name differently, but that's how it's spelled. So it's A-L-L-A-N, frankmusic.com.
Great. All right. Is there anything else you needed to add or you wanted to?
No, I think you've covered a lot of stuff. Yeah, I suppose we could go on for a few hours here talking about music and making music and all the fun that is.
Yeah.
I'm really excited to be able to do this, and and to have this as kind of a passion and love, and actually be able to make something that people can enjoy.
Yeah, well, we enjoy your music, and we really appreciate you sharing it with us here at Casey Cafe Radio.
Thank you, Kathy.